Today I have the privilege and honour of introducing one of the great scientists of our times and the father of functional immunology, Dr. Aristo Vojdani. Dr. Vojdani has a PhD in immunology and microbiology and has carried out postdoctoral studies in comparative immunology at UCLA and in cellular immunology at Tel Aviv University Medical Center. He is presently the Professor of Neuroimmunology at the Karak Institute for Graduate Studies, is a past Associate Professor at the Charles Drew UCLA School of Medicine and Science, and is currently an Assistant Clinical Professor at the Department of Preventative Medicine at the Loma Linda University in California. He's published over 160 peer-reviewed articles in scientific journals and is a member of the editorial boards of numerous peer-reviewed journals, including the Journal of Toxicology and Industrial Health, the Journal of Environmental Epidemiology and Toxicology, and the European Journal of Inflammation. He has participated in research which has been funded by the Environmental Protection Agency, the National Institute for Health, and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Dr. Vojdani's research spans a 45-year career focusing on the role of environmental factors such as toxic chemicals, infections, and dietary proteins, specifically peptides, in chronic complex diseases. Dr. Vojdani is also the CEO and Technical Director of Immunosciences in LA and is the Chief Scientific Advisor at Cyrex Labs in Phoenix, Arizona. And he's a very reputable and respected scientist. And in 2009, he received the Linus Pauling PhD Award from the American College for Advancement in Medicine. So, Dr. Vojdani, thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed for our summit, and a big warm welcome to you.
Nikki, thank you for having me on your program.
Share with us some of the current statistics about the chemical load in the environment, and how far behind you do you think that the average physician and doctors are in terms of understanding how these factors might be impacting health in general, you know, autoimmunity and fatigue?
Unfortunately, the classical physicians who are examining patients today, other than functional medicine doctors, alternative medicine doctors, and other groups associated with complementary medicine, they are very much behind. In the textbook of medicine, there are many reports and documents that drugs, such as antibiotics, can induce autoimmunity, can induce antibody production against our own tissue, such as anti-muscle antibodies, anti-nuclear antibodies, anti-DNA antibodies. When they remove those chemicals, in this case drugs, from the environment of the patient, they can reverse the autoimmune reactivity or even autoimmune disease. So they accept that this group of chemicals, which happens to be drugs, can induce autoimmune disease. But when it comes to chemicals such as formaldehyde, mercury, or nickel, it is good only for publishing articles in scientific journals, and may take 30 to 50 years that knowledge will come to the physicians who on daily basis examining patients, including patients with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia.
Wow, that's fairly disturbing. 30 to 50 years, okay. And what's the sort of statistics around just numbers of chemicals in the environment and how much many sort of new chemicals are coming in each year?
Yes, the list is incredible. Between 80 to 100,000 new chemicals were introduced in the commercial use since 1940s. Only 3 to 5% of those substances were characterized for human toxicity. Now, in the meanwhile, while they did not examine the other 95%, they are introducing additional 2,000 new chemicals every year. So many chemicals, Nikki, you and I, or the patients who have chronic fatigue syndrome, are using, you know, all of us have been are exposed to these chemicals on a daily basis. For example, this is really the very bad news, that when we look at cord blood, I'm sure you heard or read some of these articles, when they tested cord blood of the newborns and tested for about 600 or 700 chemicals, 287 commercial chemicals, including pesticides and pollutants, were found in cord blood. The meaning of that is the mother who became pregnant has many chemicals in her body.
Wow.
So the list is incredible. And so only now I see some signs and some discussion in the scientific journal articles, including Science, that NIH and NIEH, or National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, are trying to discuss this issue, why the burden of the proof should be on us who are using the chemicals, that chemicals are bad to our health. Why the burden of the proof should not be on the manufacturers. And so therefore, I believe there is some kind of suggestion, some kind of bill is going through to the Congress of the United States. Hopefully they will approve something that in the future, chemicals before their introduction into the environment and into the use by us should be screened for toxicity, and only the manufacturers have the proof of safety of those chemicals, only then to introduce them into the commercial use. But let's hope for that.
Oh, yes. I mean, we shouldn't be being used as the testing ground. Totally agree. So let's go into some of the biochemistry of the chemicals. So perhaps with an explanation about, we're exposed to them through diet, cosmetics, water, personal hygiene products, and the air. What's the kind of process that can eventually lead, for example, to the production of antibodies and autoimmunity?
Yes. Unfortunately, Nikki, there is a wrong understanding or assumption that chemicals come in and get out. Unfortunately, that's not the case. I wish that was the case. And this is based on my discussion in the many members of Society of Toxicology. These are MDs who practice in the field of toxicology, PhD scientists. They believe that majority, 95% of chemicals get in, go to the liver, liver detoxify them, and then we get rid of those chemicals. But chemicals get metabolized by the liver, cytochrome P450, phase one and phase two, right? Mm-hmm. Then those chemicals, their parent compounds or metabolites, because of their chemical structure, can bind to human tissue and form alliance with human tissue, bind to the tissue or fat, stay in our body forever. We call that the body burden of chemicals. So yes, maybe it is true that 50%, 60%, 70% of chemicals get released from our body, but 5%, 10%, even 30% of those could bind to human tissue and set the stage for autoimmune reactivity first, and then autoimmune disease.
Wow, so it's the attachment to the tissue which is key. So suddenly that's where the body suddenly goes, okay, that's an abnormal, we're going to attack it, and that's where the antibodies are coming in. And it could be autoimmune thyroid, autoimmune brain cells, autoimmune, all the different types of autoimmunities.
Absolutely. And Nikki, this article, if later on you would like to share with your audience, I will send you the PDF of this article, which was written about myself, that we looked for antibodies against xenobiotics, 12 different chemicals, which we'll discuss it later, in 400 healthy subjects. You know, just healthy subjects today may not have any symptomatology. I was interested to find out what percentage of healthy population are exposed to, not only exposed to chemicals, we know everybody's exposed to chemicals. But what percentage of them chemicals bind to their tissue, which in the future may develop autoimmune disease? The answer was between 15 to 20% of healthy subjects walking today on the street make antibodies against chemicals plus their own tissue. And this article was published in Journal of Applied Toxicology. And I got very, very positive comments about this because I discussed this article, exposure to chemicals, as a mechanism by which the body reacts to chemicals plus our own tissue, resulting in autoimmunity.
Wow, so we're sitting on an autoimmune explosion in the future.
Yes, and the amazing part is this, that here, the best example. I was reading this article in Wall Street Journal yesterday. A company in Seattle are looking for natural remedies or medications from nature for autoimmune diseases. And they say, well, it's not good. Whatever we do right now, it's not good enough because we are suppressing the immune system. We have to be targeting those lymphocytes attacking the tissue, like, you know, like targeting cancer therapy, the same thing for autoimmunity. So they came out with this idea that some kind of new medication which can target T helper 1 or T helper 17, which are involved in autoimmune diseases. But when it comes to causes of autoimmune diseases, they say, well, really we don't know what are the causes of increase in percentage of autoimmune diseases. But you and I, we know the answer. The answer is exposure to so many toxic chemicals we are using on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's so clear to us, but yeah, it's going to be a long time before we get the rest of the communities to understand. We've been talking on the summit about, obviously, we've talked about gluten sensitivity with Dr. Tom O'Brien and food sensitivity in general with a few other people on the summit. Interestingly, both of them suggested that it's the chemical exposure is also causing this explosion in food sensitivities as well, like it may be one of the causal factors behind that. What's your view on that?
I 100% agree with that statement. In fact, in my presentations, I have several slides explaining that in very simplistic approach, which let me share that with you or with the audience. Mm-hmm. That I use Mr. Peanuts as an example, that when we consume peanut contain about 60% proteins. But unfortunately, there are pesticides, there are aflatoxins, and many other heavy metals bound to the proteins of peanuts or even grains, such as wheat and barley. So our digestive enzymes are meant to digest the proteins of wheat, such as gluten and non-gluten proteins or peanuts proteins, to single amino acids. Proteins get digested to peptides first by digestive enzymes, then digestive enzymes break down to peptides to single amino acids, and the amino acids get absorbed, which give us the energy, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But when chemicals are bound to those proteins, our digestive enzymes cannot work. The analogy is like a scissor. The enzyme is a scissor which cuts, you know, the bonds between different amino acids of peptides. But now, when chemicals bind to these amino acids of gluten and peanut proteins and other food proteins, the scissor do not work, and therefore these peptides, undigested peptides, get accumulated in the intestinal tract. Some of them bind to our tissue proteins, such as transglutaminase in the case of gluten. Now, the analogy is almost similar to chemicals, toxic chemicals bind to our tissue antigens, right? Here, a component of dietary proteins bind to our own tissue and set the stage for immune reactivity against the food antigen, as well as our own tissue antigen, in this case, transglutaminase and other tissue antigens as well. So I agree with that statement, absolutely possible. Chemicals are responsible for us making antibodies against different food proteins and peptides.
Fantastic, okay. And I wanted to ask you, it's widely understood about autoimmune thyroid, but something we hardly ever hear about is autoimmune adrenal. And in chronic fatigue patients, we know there's lowered cortisol output from the adrenal glands. I've always thought it was maybe more of a signaling problem from the hypothalamic pituitary axis because of all the stress and so on, and that was led on to the lowered cortisol output. How common do you think it is that it could actually be autoimmune adrenal?
Yes, I agree with you that HPA axis playing a significant role. Similar to that, also autoimmunity plays a major role, because one of the antibodies I used to test, and now today is part of the Array 5 of Cyrex, was adrenal antibodies. In more than 50% of patients with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, we found antibodies against adrenal gland. We found antibodies against thyroid gland. And when we make antibodies against those glands, results in fatigue and fibromyalgia.
Absolutely. It's strange that we don't hear more about autoimmune adrenal. There's no scientific reason it should have been out there. It's just that I'm not sure why we don't talk about it more.
And in fact, even we know that what is the target? There is an enzyme called hydroxylase in the adrenal gland, which is a target of autoimmunity. So 25 years ago, I used to measure antibodies against adrenal gland, specifically against that enzyme. And today, that is part of Array 5. That's why we are measuring antibodies against adrenal gland.
Fantastic. And let's actually move on to talking about some of this amazing state-of-the-art testing that you've designed at Cyrex Labs. If we talk about, I wanted to talk about the chemical immune reactivity array 11 first. Now, I've heard you say that you weren't a fan of blood or urine load testing, but you do put some weight on fat biopsy, as at least it confirms exposure. But from my understanding, I thought even with fat biopsy, it may not be enough to assess how badly these exposures are affecting somebody. So, for example, two people could have the same fat biopsy results, say positive to mercury, but maybe only one person is having a major problem and maybe gets chronic fatigue, because it depends if the immune system's reacting or not. Am I on the right lines there, or what's your view?
Your questions are very well taken. I believe in body burden of chemicals. And in fact, after my publication of that article in Journal of Applied Toxicology, several scientists from major universities contacted me, and they want to do research with me about mechanism of autoimmunity and its association with autoimmune disease. And they believe also in body burden of chemicals. Why? Because if we measure chemicals right now in blood and urine, we'll find thousands of chemicals in blood and urine of every single individual. So what is the value of spending the money and measuring chemicals in blood and urine? That shows that my detoxification system works very well and the chemicals get clear from my system. So I'm worried about the chemicals which bind to my tissue, including the fat. So in the case of fat, I know it's not easy to do fat biopsy. And if we find chemicals in the fat, I believe that individual with body burden of chemicals have more capacity to develop autoimmune disease in the future than the one without having chemicals in fat. That individual may have chronic fatigue, But that chronic fatigue in that individual without having mercury or heavy metals in the fat could be associated with different factor. I believe in measuring the immune reaction against chemicals bound to human tissue, and that's exactly what we are doing in Array 11. I want you to think about this possibility of chemicals that we are measuring antibody against, such as formaldehyde or isocyanide or trimethylmethyl anhydride or benzene ring or even bisphenol A. Some of these chemicals actually act like gluten in the dough. So they're using these chemicals in the industry to make all kinds of products. For example, if they want to have flexibility in a plastic, they add trimethylmethyl anhydride and phthalic anhydride. Isocyanide is, you know, that bind many chemicals to each other. So these chemicals used in many, many industries, including, some chemicals used as fire retardants. Many, many chemicals are found in cosmetics, including formaldehyde. So these chemicals are everywhere, and therefore we are measuring antibodies against those. Yes, in the literature, there are many articles showing that, for example, heavy metals are responsible for development of autoimmune reactivities, including lupus-like syndrome in animal model. But when it comes to human, we are behind, as I said earlier, by 20 to 30 to sometimes 50 years, in recognizing the role of these toxic chemicals in induction of autoimmunities.
And it seems that this, the immune, you know, having the immune specific test is so important, because I've read about studies of mice. I think there's over 50 studies of mice where they would inject mercury, and there'd be a subgroup that would maybe get eczema, and another subgroup would get very serious sort of forms of autoimmune disorders. And they were able to identify a gene that was responsible for the differing response. And presumably we'll end up discovering that with humans too.
Well, one of my colleagues from UC San Diego, Scripps Clinic, Dr. Michael Pollard, who is the leader in this field of induction of autoimmunity by heavy metals, including mercury. He has published numerous articles explaining the mechanisms, how these chemicals, heavy metals and others, can bind to nuclear proteins, extractable nuclear antigens, the DNA, and all of that, which is a mechanism responsible for development of autoimmune disease in animal models. Of course, when it comes to human, there is no way that we can test that. But we have to learn if can happen in other mammalians, can happen also in human beings.
Absolutely. So with Test Array 11, what are all the chemicals, just if you list what the chemicals are? And also, if somebody 100% removes the chemicals and they cleanse, is this a once-off test? Or would they, if they ever have a future test, would it always be positive, even if they were completely clear of the chemical?
Yes. We are testing against 12 major chemicals used in many, many industries, including aflatoxin, which is found in many foods, including peanuts, formaldehyde, glutaraldehyde, as I said, isocyanate, trimethylmethyl anhydride. These act like gluten-like chemicals. Chemicals act like gluten by binding other chemicals to each other. Benzene ring found in the solvents. Bisphenol A, which is the plastic. And by the way, recently I read this article that BPA-free as bad as bisphenol A. And I was screaming years before saying that please do not buy this issue, but do not be convinced that bisphenol A-free plastic is healthy. Because plastic for me is a plastic, because they use all of those glue-like material to make any type of plastic. Tetrabromobisphenol A is a fire retardant. Tetrachloroethylene used in the cleaners. Parabens in many, many cosmetics. Mercury compounds. Mixed heavy metals. very recently, about a week ago, I read this article about nickel, which is a heavy metal, with like mercury, have the capacity simultaneously to bind to four different amino acids, meaning the binding is so strong that chelation will be very difficult by chelation to remove the heavy metals from our tissue. And so this chemical, this, you know, looking at level of heavy metals, in particular nickel, found that majority of the grains have very high levels of nickel, which its source actually is from nature. Another meaning, Nikki, our world is so contaminated with chemicals. Even organic foods right now contain significant amount of heavy metals, and therefore binding those heavy metals to the proteins of the food we consume, we cannot digest, we react against combination of those, and due to that mechanism or cross-reactivities, we end up with autoimmune reactivity first and then autoimmune disease later on.
Wow. Okay, that's fantastic. That's very interesting information that I'd actually not heard anywhere else yet. So that's very interesting.
So that's why it's important to measure these antibodies against these 12 different chemicals. If those antibodies are elevated, meaning you have body burden of those chemicals, your immune system is not going to lie. If you make antibodies against parabens, for example, at least you can change your cosmetics.
Yes.
You can change your shampoo. You can do a lot. We are living in the world that we are blessed with all kind of choices, Nikki. We can go and buy very healthy cosmetics, green cosmetics, without parabens. And so to answer your question, yes, at certain level, first of all, we have to say, if I make antibodies against these chemicals, in this particular case, I'm using parabens. So therefore, let's stop using those chemicals so not to increase the entry of those chemicals to my body. So that's the first step. Then hopefully by doing detoxification, get rid of those chemicals from your body, and then, so that's detect, remove, and then repair your immune system and the gut and everything. Hopefully that way you are going to prevent autoimmune disease in the future.
Fantastic. And we'll touch lastly on that again, coming back to that as well, because that's very important. I just, I also wanted to ask you an important question I want to fit in before the end of the interview. Also food sensitivity testing. So within the chronic fatigue community, the sort of studies that have been published are all looking at IgA only reactions. And we have this wonderful analogy from Dr. Tom O'Brien about which was very useful, this idea of the immune system is obviously the police against foreign invaders, but there's different arms. So IgE may be the Coast Guard, and then we've got the Navy, which could be IgG, and Marines, which is IgM, and Air Force, which is IgA. And obviously we have other parts of the immune system as well, like the cellular immunity as well, that might respond. So it's so limited to just be looking at IgE, and then to write off food as being a problem at all for chronic fatigue patients, it's just cast aside because of this limited view. Would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, definitely. I will refer to an article I published in a journal called Nutrition and Metabolism in 2009, where I did measure IgE, IgG, IgA and IgM against raw and processed food antigens. So I found about 3 to 5% of individuals made IgE antibodies. And yes, IgE antibodies against food could be found in patients with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. Why? Because IgE, as you know, is involved in the release of mediators, as cytokines, chemokines, which all of them are involved in a mechanism of induction of chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. So it is important to do IgE. And also it is important to measure IgE against raw and modified food, because I found half of those did not react to raw food, but made IgE antibodies against modified foods. And finally, you have to measure also IgG and IgA. It's not enough just to measure IgA or IgG. Yes, Dr. O'Brien is correct. You have to look at all the ammunitions that our body is making against our food that we consume. And that's why in Array 10, we are measuring combination of IgG plus IgA against raw and modified foods, because that's very, very important. Because this is a real approach to what all of us consuming on a daily basis. Certain food, yes, we eat in a raw form, but many foods we cook those foods and then we consume them. So process of cooking and heat, high temperature, changing the antigenic structure of that food, and therefore our immune reactivity could be different against raw versus modified food. And unfortunately, many laboratories who are doing food IgG or IgA testing, following my steps from 1985 and 1986, which I developed ELISA for IgG testing, without going back and thinking about all this process, you know, they got stuck in 1985. And so today I came back last year saying that it's not enough to measure antibodies against raw food. We have to measure antibodies against modified foods. And there are many other steps that I did emphasize in the development of Array 10, which is not done in other laboratories other than Cyrex. So in addition to raw and cooked food or modified food, sometimes we have to look at lectins and agglutinins. As you know, for example, in the case of gluten sensitivity or non-celiac gluten sensitivity and celiac disease, some individual may not react to gluten, but they can react to wheat germ agglutinin. And the same things, lectins and agglutinins from other foods. There are food colorings. Many individuals react to food colorings bound to food proteins. I'm sure you heard about meat glue. They are using transglutaminase to stick different components of meat together. There are at least 12 different advantageous points that we are using at Cyrex laboratory testing, including oils from different grains, different foods, for example, peanuts, soy, and so forth. It's important to measure antibodies against proteins of oils, such as oleocins. It is important to measure antibodies against gums, which many people do not pay attention. So there are many advantages points, which are 12 altogether, that we are recommending through Cyrex laboratory testing, which are not done in any other laboratories but at Cyrex labs.
And that is Test Array 10. Is that right?
Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's another one of the fantastic tests that is just completely state of the art.
And Nikki, for those who are interested to read more about this, Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine, Volume 21, 2015, was uniquely for food immune reaction and autoimmunity. The editor asks 14 different laboratories who are doing food IgG or other antibody testing to submit articles. Unfortunately, many of them did not submit. I ended up with 7 manuscripts by myself in this special issue, which I recommend to read, about the importance of food immune reactivity and mechanism responsible for food induction of autoimmune disease.
Fantastic. That many of our practitioners are going to be following up on that, I'm sure. Fantastic. So just coming to the final question. So for patients with chronic fatigue, you talked about detect, remove, and repair, which would be detox and heal the gut. In terms of detecting for someone with fatigue, what are the tests that you would suggest people do?
My recommendation for detect, always go back to the triggers. We have three triggers, three different triggers, which can first have effect on the gut microbiota. And those are toxic chemicals, dietary components, and some infections, such as gum disease, can release a toxin, can change the integrity of gut microbiota. Change in integrity of gut microbiota causes release of bacterial toxins. Bacterial toxins plus other mediators of inflammation can open the tight junctions. Now all those unwanted antigens get into the circulation, inducing inflammation in circulation. Inflammation from circulation can go to every single tissue, including by affecting the blood-brain barriers, can open the blood-brain barriers. Now inflammation can go into the brain, resulting in neuroautoimmunity. So these three triggers are responsible for development of autoimmune reactivity first and autoimmune disease in the future, almost in every single component of the body, including the brain. So therefore, the emphasis should be on all those three triggers. In one patient with chronic fatigue could be the infection. In another patient with chronic fatigue could be the toxic chemicals. In another patient with chronic fatigue could be gluten or other dietary proteins or antigens. Or in another one could be all three. So therefore, the emphasis should be on detect by doing the right kind of testing, which are done at Cyrex laboratories.
Yeah, so would you say which specific actual
testing? I will start with array 2 for leaky gut.
Yep.
Array 3 for gluten immune reactivity. Array 4 for cross-reactive foods. Array 10, food immune reactivity and autoimmunity. Then array 5, 6, 7, and 8, all associated with autoimmunities against various tissues. And then finally, array 11, which is associated with another trigger, toxic chemicals, and another array, which will be available in the future, is about the role of infections in autoimmunities. So all of those tests done at Cyrex, I highly recommend to do that in order to do the detect. When you find the right triggers, you remove the triggers from the environment of the patient. In the case of food, it's very easy. You remove that from their diet without reintroduction of that food in the future. The patient will improve significantly. If those triggers are toxic chemicals, you try to do detoxification and remove the chemicals from the body. And if the triggers are infections, there are many ways that we can treat the infections. And that way, by supporting the gut and repairing the body's immune system, I believe the body will become victorious and we can prevent many autoimmune diseases or autoimmune associated diseases, which affects about 53 million Americans and 10% of the world population. So detect, remove, and repair.
Fantastic. And people can find practitioners at cyrexlabs.com, and practitioners can register at cyrexlabs.com. And they people are signed up between both in the USA and the UK, which is fantastic. So people should have everything they need with that. And any final comment before we finish?
I think the best final comment is that nothing has changed since I started working with patients with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. Still, the environmental triggers, infections, toxic chemicals, and dietary proteins and peptides are responsible for development of chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and associated inflammatory and autoimmune disorders. So the best way to combat these diseases or these abnormalities, to detect by using the right testing offered by Cyrex and remove the triggers and then repair the barriers. And I will repeat the same sentence I said, you know, I mentioned earlier, and you believe in your body, your body's immune system will become victorious.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Vojdani. Thank you for all the fantastic work that you do and the amazing and fantastic gluten test that you've created. And thank you for so much for perhaps probably one of the most important talks on the whole summit. So it's been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Nikki. It was lovely to be interviewed by you. You are extremely knowledgeable.